We lost KBM in A Fallen Soldier to the Darth Maul wick that just happened. He dropped out. OSF, no leverage ever, has made it onto the show. Why don't you get started with our sponsor, OSF, and then we'll get into stuff.
Yeah, hey everyone, welcome to Ret Radio, episode 63. Sorry for everyone who got liquidated in the last hour. My condolences. I also got liquidated as well, but in a different way. As you guys know, the show is sponsored by Rollbit, so check out rollbit.com. As usual, we'll have two codes to give away, and we'll do a loot box spin at the end of the show. The first code to give away, is MICH4910. MICH4910. And we'll give the second code away at the later. Did I pronounce that right? Is that how you'd say it if you were Dutch?
Oh, you're muted. You're muted.
Yeah, you did a good job.
Mich 4910.
Average to poor, I think. All right, so kind of a wild start. Like, it was touch and go there for a minute, and we're still doing the show. But that was a crazy move over the last 24 hours, 48 hours, and then even over the last hour, we saw a big wick down. I think something like 600 million of liquidations just happened, which has got to be one of the biggest ever. And Bitcoin is currently trading around 62k, which we were just talking about before pre-show, like. That is just insane. Like compared to where we were just at the start of the year, it felt like, you know, this, I think most people's predictions maybe for the year end was something like 100K, and we're already at 62K. Like it's not that far to go here. How are you feeling about the market, Michael?
Honestly, I was just talking about it at the office.
You're a little bit quiet. I don't know if your mic volume's low.
Maybe it's just I'm on my phone, so that's why.
Okay.
I can get my headphones if that's okay. But anyway, we were talking at the office regarding what was happening with the markets, and to be fair, Bitcoin has never seen this strength pre-halving at all. The chances of hitting a new all-time high pre-halving. It's pretty likely, despite that we just had the Darth Maul candle. Honestly, I think we just continue to go higher with the ETF inflow. Corrections are going to be really rough, but if this is the first leg of this bull market, I think probably this cycle is going to go way higher than we were anticipating.
Yeah, like I think we're kind of echoing that too. I think the real thing that's caught everyone off guard is how much the ETF. Has really taken over the narrative of crypto. Like, I think people were expecting maybe even 20 billion of AUM by the end of the year. I think that's what we had the Bloomberg analyst on, and that's what he was predicting. And looks like we've gotten there already. We're already 50% of the AUM of the gold ETFs. We're already 50% of gold AUM, and it just feels like it's happening every single day. Like BlackRock, Fidelity, both now are advising that you should have crypto as part of your portfolios. Like, it's just, it feels like we're finally getting mainstream adoption. And that's when you kind of take a step back and you just realize how small crypto is, like as an asset class. Yeah, we're just over 2 trillion now, 2 point whatever. But that's still relatively small. That's like a small to medium sized asset class for Western markets. Like this thing could really go crazy if you start getting these big institutional money managers come in. I know you've been dancing around markets, OSF. What have you been looking at this week?
Yeah, you know, I've been pretty big in meme coins and stuff, but I have a lot of ETH and I've been watching Bitcoin and Sol. I mean, Solana's underperformance has been very, very remarkable. And, you know, that's obviously because of the Novogratz stuff. But I don't know. I think we've never seen this much strength in BTC pre-halving, but we've also never had a spot Bitcoin ETF with insane amounts of inflows pre-halving either. And at the end of the day, when you have $500 million of buy pressure every single day for spot Bitcoin ETF, it's going to have a price impact for something that has limited supply. And that's it's really what we're seeing now. And it's why, you know, Bitcoin dominance is above 55% now. It's at the highest level it's been in over 12 months. And that's where all the strength is, because that's where all the buying is right now. And it just, you have to respect it for what it is, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bitcoin just continues to be going. So this isn't your first cycle then. It seems as though you've been around for a few of them. Maybe get a little bit of background of yourself. I mean, I think you're one of the best. When I first came into crypto, which is a few years ago, you definitely had one of the biggest followings and obviously posted all your YouTube videos, but I didn't really know the genesis of how you came into things. So and you now have an institutional trading firm, it sounds like.
Well, I hope this mic works now.
Yeah, that's good. That's much better.
There we go. Finally, we fixed that issue. Anyway, I've got into the market since January 2017. So I've been trading for a few cycles now. Kind of started as just a private trader, just trading my own funds, having a Discord group, which is very similar. Everybody has a Discord group nowadays. And then I progressed to a more professional trading, in which we trade for clients and we assist clients with high net individuals. So above 100K, we build portfolios for them, we build strategies for them, and we assist them with their portfolio through the entire cycle. So it's not institutional, but we're trading for clients' funds and we're assisting clients' funds. So in that way, we progressed over the years from starting as a Discord group, being a retail trader, to advising high-end individuals.
Right. Okay. That makes a lot more sense. But and in terms of how you're forming these strategies, is it like systematic stuff that you put into an algo, or you're like, I know you're big on technical indicators and stuff like that. So how exactly are you building these portfolios?
Well, to be fair, I think everyone has their own strategy. So I started initially by just trading very, well, directional, just using leverage. This radio or this podcast has been called Rex Radio, and the hosts are liquidated today. So I guess that's very familiar. I've been having that back in the day as well. But then I figured that there are a lot of risks involved by having a one-way strategy. So we initiated a strategy surrounding timing the markets well by choosing the segments that we want to choose. So this time we are more focused on the Ethereum ecosystem. That's where we want to allocate our funds to. And then we trade the volatility. So we calculate the volatility, and based on the time frame that we're using for our clients, we just trade the volatility with allocation. So if the markets are overshooting like we do right now, our allocation is going to be way less than when the markets are correcting by 30%. And we just place those orders for a set time frame where we allocate more or less depending on the volatility of the markets, which is a very easy to follow strategy for clients and for ourselves, because we always have an allocation in the markets. That has some risk, but not being in the markets has an even higher risk, or being fully allocated has an even higher risk than not being allocated. So through this, we can just ride the waves, I would say.
Okay. So just like unpacking that slightly, you right now, how are you, sounds like you're positioning your clients less lower beta just because of the high levels of volatility. Is that what a market is?
The higher the volatility, the wider the orders will be. So let's assume that you have a position that starts at 40K. You suspect that there is a certain chance the markets continue to rally to the upside, and there's a chance that it goes down. If that is 50-50, probably your allocation will be around 50% as well. Then, based on the volatility that has been taking place historically, so for instance, the past month or two, your orders will be placed at the volatility that has been calculated through it. So 1x4, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the further it gets away from the price that you can see, and the expectation is that the volatility picks up, the more you will be taking profits into USDT to making sure that your risks are getting lower. On the other hand, if the markets are correcting and it hits your chance of having that correction, you will be filling those orders lower you get with the markets. So in that way, if, for instance, Bitcoin corrects by 25 to 30%, the allocation can increase from 40 to 80%, and the highest amount of buyers are at the lowest points of that wick. So in that way, I'm not getting liquidated, but also my returns will be way less than when you're trading leverage. But I think that most people honestly don't really want to trade with a high volume of, or high leverage at all. They just want to have an allocation in the markets and do it the best they can.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's interesting. So basically, it's like a buy low, sell high sort of strategy. But your signal is just volatility for when to lean in and out.
Yeah, it's just volatility trading, basically, which means that the higher the vol, the higher the return will be. And to be fair, the volatility in Bitcoin is absolutely bananas the last few weeks. To be fair, 3 to 4 months ago, Bitcoin was still 30K. So,
yeah, I mean, there was a period of very low volatility there just before that as well, right?
Yeah, so that's when you adjust your strategy. So when the markets pick up and the vol is going to be higher, your orders will be wider too. And to be fair, the markets, as we have seen the past few days, that is not great for the strategy. You're going to take profits earlier than where the markets are right now. But the upside is that when the correction takes place, that's when you really are going to capture the extra amount of Bitcoin, and also by deciding in which altcoins you want to allocate to.
Okay. And the other thing that I picked up from what you said is you're focusing on the ETH ecosystem right now. Obviously an ecosystem which has kind of only really started to perform over the last few weeks. Was there a reason that you just chose ETH, or was it like a call on the market, or you just felt like that was the most liquidity? Like,
I think that earlier we've seen that everything outside of Ethereum was doing really well. So SuiSci, Solana, Injective, all those ecosystems have been thriving based on the fact that Ethereum just was very expensive to be used. Now, with Bitcoin accelerating, I think that in the coming 3 to 4 weeks, the spot ETF hype surrounding Ethereum is going to pick up some momentum, especially if Ethereum is going to be classified as a commodity. And additionally, I think that from a developer's perspective, the upgrades that are going to be released on the mainnet in the coming few weeks, Denkun upgrade, for instance, that has been successfully being launched on the testnet going to the mainnet, is going to push more developers into the Ethereum ecosystem and reduce the transaction costs that everybody has to have when they use Ethereum. And that's when I think Ethereum is going to accelerate and probably break the all-time high as well.
I mean, OSF will be pleased to hear that.
Well, yes. I mean, I wasn't expecting it to see it this early in the stage, to be fair.
Yeah. It's the really for I mean, ETH had such a tough run towards the end of last year and the beginning of this year, and it just felt like there were so many exciting new L1 stuff. You had the whole L2 thing, and you know, people are like, especially in this space, people are always trying to chase like the high beta trade. They're like, oh, I don't want to buy Bitcoin because I want to make more money on something else. And with ETH, there are so many options of other L2s that people wanted to chase. For me, the thing that really changed it is this, you know, this ETF that's coming for ETH, possibly in May. We see an approval. And if we do get that approval, then there's just like, you see it with Bitcoin right now, right? Bitcoin dominance has gone so high because they're just buying so much Bitcoin. And I think if we get this approval for ETH, we'll see the same thing there. And that could really be the catalyst for it to get back to all-time highs. Whether we get that approval or not, I'm not really sure. It's a different story than Bitcoin, but it seems like most of the analysts are still constructive on it happening.
Well, to be fair, I think there's so much more involved in an approval of the Ethereum ETF than probably the markets are estimating it right now. Like, Bitcoin is a very easy to understand concept. There's a store of value. It's similar to gold or digital gold. But with Ether, with the entire staking system surrounding the entire blockchain, making it more stable, secure, and all those things, if that is not classified as a security, it opens up the entire blockchain space to actually be adopted into the real world. So that's where, if you are talking about high beta plays, I think if Ethereum is fulfilling its role as a settlement layer, I think that everything on Ethereum is just going to expand even more. And if you think about real high beta plays, I think this cycle is just the cycle of Pepe. To be fair.
Yeah, we've definitely danced around meme coins in a big way. Pepe, Whiff, Mog, all of these, like, they just feel like, I don't know. Like, they still, I said to OSF yesterday, like, of all the sectors that have moved, like AI is increasingly making little sense to me in terms of valuations. Gaming too. Memes is the one where, like, actually they don't make sense because they could be a lot higher. Like, compared to the meme sector that was, that happened in the previous two cycles, like, we haven't got that many new coins at a billion. Like, Pepe only moved there yesterday. I guess Bonk reclaimed above a billion, but it does still feel like that as a sector could still have quite a lot of legs.
Well, to be fair, if you think about the previous all-time high of Dogecoin, it was 100 billion market cap, I guess, in 2021. And Pepe, as you can see, it's 2.2. So it's hard to believe, but it's it could reach 100 billion during this cycle. Wow. If meme coins are really going to accelerate. And I think the values are already going through the roof, and you probably are going to question yourself, is this project really worth the amount of 2.2 billion? It's probably not, but it will go way higher, just like in the dot-com bubble. Just no sense companies are reaching numbers that they will never hit again. And this cycle is going to be the exact same, but that means that during this period, you can actually make a lot of money out of it.
Do you think Doge trades at an inflated value versus other meme coins because you sort of have the Elon Musk thing in the background, and that was the whole reason why it kicked it off? And maybe perhaps there's an argument to say other meme coins don't have that same tailwind, or, you know, that same like left field possibility that Doge does.
It's hard to say. I mean, Dogecoin will probably accelerate because Elon Musk wants to. So I think in terms of altcoins and meme coins, if Doge moves, everything that has now Doge with had, there's another one that's valued at 500 million now or so. All these meme coins are just going through the roof. You can see it right now already. Pepe is waking up. Shiba Inu is waking up. Floki Inu is waking up. TokenFi, that's probably the token that's built on Shiba Inu or any of, or Floki, any of the two. I think meme coins, just go to the latest short cycle we've seen with Solana, where Bonk was just the example of what happens to meme coins if the ecosystem starts to thrive. Bonk did a 80x in 2 weeks.
Yeah,
I think it was. And it's just back down again by 90%. But the point is that if you're looking at meme coins, the Dogecoin is probably a higher beta than Ethereum. Dogecoin will also start to accelerate if Twitter or X is going to integrate it. And if you are looking for an investment into meme coins, then Pepe and all the other ones are an even higher beta and still are a play at this point in the cycle.
So do you have any, so I know you're obviously bullish on the ETH ecosystem. Do you have any plays outside of that that you like at the moment?
In the meantime, Bitcoin is dropping down a little bit. Honestly, I'm very much focused on the Ether ecosystem at this point. My initial interests are in Deepin, RWA, DeFi, layer twos. So that's Arbitrum, Optimism. And I used to be into Sui and Sai as a additional portion into my portfolio to just hedge my Ethereum position. But at this point, I'm just going to focus on Ether solely because I think that, as I just mentioned, these two ingredients of a potential bull cycle on Ether with Denkun upgrade and the ETF are going to fuel the markets over there by a mile. And if you think about Bitcoin being at 60K at this point, pre-halving, I think that if Bitcoin starts to consolidate for a few months, let's hope, it's going to push the altcoins to anywhere near their all-time highs as well.
Yeah, I think, what do you think can be possible target prices for new all-time highs for Bitcoin and ETH and that kind of stuff? I know it's tough to judge, but where do you guys see this, you know, what levels do you guys see this stuff getting to?
Perhaps Plan B is right.
You think 250? 250? What's his?
Estimating like 600 or 700K.
Jesus. That'd be incredible.
To be fair, I think I'll be out of the market if that is going to be a real number.
That would be. I mean, if you look at some of these numbers, right? Like, there was a stat that Bitcoin ETFs did more transactions than QQQ and SPX, that Eric Balkunas tweeted out. This is like the fastest growing ETF. This is BlackRock's, I think this is like BlackRock's, it's like 50% of BlackRock's ETF inflows, and they have, BlackRock has 417 ETFs across the entire financial markets. Like, that's an insane stat. And when you think about like market cap terms, you think about the market cap of all these different financial assets that BlackRock has in their 417 ETFs, so 50% of that has just come from Bitcoin alone, which, and Bitcoin is just over half of the total crypto market cap, and that alone is just over $1 trillion, which is half of Nvidia, a third of Amazon or whatever. Like, you know, these other, it just shows you like how small crypto is and how much, how big TradFi involvement is in it now and how much bigger it could be. And it, when you think about it from that way, it makes targets like 700k or 800k seem a bit more reasonable. who knows where we can get to on the cycle, but it doesn't seem, when you think about TradFi numbers, it doesn't seem that crazy, and we obviously have a big TradFi involvement now.
And there are a few things that are interesting to it. Like, first of all, I'm not sure whether we're going to reach those numbers, but I'm getting into the thesis that if this is the first leg and Bitcoin reaches almost a new all-time high, the chances are that this cycle is going to go way higher than most of the people are expecting. One of those topics are diminishing returns, which I think you can just throw out of the window, because there are just an elephant in the room is just buying Bitcoin on a daily basis that the markets have never seen before. So because of the influx of the liquidity, it's probably going to go higher than we all expect. But then if you think about the dot-com bubble, the market cap of the dot-com bubble was 10 to 15 trillion in 2000. If you calculate the inflation over the years, then you come to a number of 30 to 40 trillion as the nowadays value of the dot-com bubble. Crypto is just, as I can see, 2.2 trillion, which means that the total market cap is relatively low. And then when you think about it, there were some articles stating that there is a likely influx coming from Wall Street by 200 billion USD. If that is going to be a real number, you need to multiply that by around 20 to 30 to generate the actual impact in the markets. The market cap is 1.2 trillion for Bitcoin. You can't just add 200 billion to it. It's actually way more because of supply shifts that it's giving towards the markets, and the lower supply on the markets, the higher it will go. But let's just say 20 to 30 X of that number, you get to 300K without retail buyers, without the rest of the world stepping in. So to be fair, I think, 300K is a very likely number, and likely we'll see way higher.
Man, I'm getting bulled up.
Yeah, this conversation has definitely made me feel more bullish than I was feeling like an hour ago.
Well, so what changed for you? Like, it's just been the ETF that's changed for you? Like, did you always think that was what was your target before all this sort of stuff started happening?
That's a question to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, the ETF has changed every dynamic of the market.
Yeah. I think so too. Like, it suddenly everything's starting to make sense from, like you said, like plan B. So, oh, maybe he was right. Like, suddenly it's gone from Capo was right to plan B was right. It's kind of a funny
Capo.
It's a funny shift.
Yeah. He turned himself into a meme, it feels like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although he's right today, you know. I think he called for a wick down, but he's got to be right once.
Broken clock is right once a day, twice a day, actually.
Twice a day. And in terms of how you trade, like, how did you go from being like just a trader with a Discord group to now having this more systematic model? Were you always like that, or did you learn by getting wrecked? Like you said, like we're wrecked radio. Like, how, what was your experience in kind of coming to your current trading model?
I think just going through phases where you lose it all. This is, as I mentioned, this is my third cycle. I went full time on January 1st, 2018, which was 10 days after the all-time high in 2017. So I endured a nice 2-year bear market.
Were you a trader before that? Like, did you trade FX or something like that? No.
Nothing. Just a student. Economics. Lots of different trading over there with, well, night hours, I would say, at the bars. Anyway, I think you learn through experience. And I think that the past bear market, I've also hit a lot of those losses. And I felt like if I'm going to be one-sided in the markets through this way and using leverage, I probably won't be making it because I'm just making the same mistakes over and over again. And there are so many risks involved by doing this. And honestly, I feel I can make more money by compounding my returns instead of adding leverage. So that's when I started to think about a potential strategy, which I've designed alongside my team members, which is this volatility way of trading, which you can do in terms of an upwards trend, but you can also turn that one around if the markets are shifting. So at some point, you can just start shorting or hedging your positions in such a way, but you avoid using excessive leverage, which I think most of the people shouldn't be using at all because there's just so many risks involved and everybody knows about it. Actually, leverage trading is getting banned in the Netherlands completely.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Bybit was the last one standing and they are...
Bybit were based in the Netherlands, aren't they?
No, they are based in Singapore, but they have the license to operate in the Netherlands. But the Dutch bank doesn't allow futures. So they need to get rid of it. And you can still trade margin on spot markets, but that is just illiquid. So probably most people will just move away.
What do you mean by compound? Like, how do you compound? Like, you have very high probability setups then? And then, like, how are you taking profits in the right way? Or... like, what's your strategy for like compounding these sort of gains?
So if you are building a position and you make a return, you just add those returns back into the markets by reallocating. Or you're going to do it that you have been taking profits and the markets are likely to have a correction. You just place those orders based on the volatility on a certain level lower, which is 1 vol, 2 vol, et cetera, et cetera. And from there, you can start compounding your returns. It is a less volatile way of trading your portfolio, but there are also less risks involved. So, for instance, we have been trading SUI and SAI. We are entirely out of that position. And then we rotate towards an asset that hasn't been doing that at all, which inevitably is going to go up at some point because it's a bull cycle and everything goes up. And then at some point, you just start to rotate towards UCT because the chances are going to be increased that there is a market correction taking place. And then there is the risk of being wrong and the markets continue to go up. But it's just rotating, reallocating, taking profits and reinvesting the returns that you have been granted to.
Okay. And in terms of, like I said, like how are you taking profits? So you have to hit something in terms of the volatility or a lot of what your strategy seemed to be is like how you get into trades, but how are you getting out of them?
So for instance, if there's an example and the volatility of a certain asset is 10% in a week, then
just break it down to like the audience, like what would a 10% volatility mean?
If a 10% volatility in a week happens, the chances are that the certain asset is going to move up or down by 10%. That's basically what it says. You can make a strategy where if it hits 10%, I want to take 5% of my allocation out of the markets because it has hit my upper boundaries of the actual volatility or what is likely happening in 90% of the cases. If it is going 15%, 20%, 25%, you start selling more because it is hitting an outlier in terms of chances. So the higher it goes, the further away it happens from the regular volatility in that time frame, and the more you need to take profit because the chances are that the markets are going to go back down again. That's basically how it is. So if, for instance, an altcoin is hitting or is reaching 10% volatility in a week, you take 5% out at 10%, then 10% out at 15%, then 20% out at 20%, and that's just how you continue. And if you're out of the position, the markets continue to rally, be my guest. That's completely fine. Ultimately, the goal is to outperform Bitcoin. If Bitcoin is pulling a run from 15K to 300K in a bull cycle and you outperform Bitcoin, you are outperforming basically every asset manager or fund manager.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So it's really just, again, if volatility hits a certain level, you're looking to get out. And is this strategy beating Bitcoin right now? Like Bitcoin is, I read the other day, is like outperforming pretty much everything right now. Like, do you feel like there's a time where this strategy really performs? And is that where Bitcoin's kind of just trending?
I think there are two interesting factors in this strategy, which is that you allocate towards assets outside of the Bitcoin market. So you allocate towards altcoins. That's where you're getting the returns. And also, you're going to have a return based on the fact that markets correct and you reallocate into those. The worst times are when Bitcoin goes vertical. That's usually a period where altcoins are lagging behind. And you can see it in the dominance. The dominance is going through the roof. It's back to like 53% or so, or 54, or maybe even higher, actually. So these are the worst times if you're allocated into the markets outside of Bitcoin. So when we need to catch up, when Bitcoin corrects and the altcoins start to fire, that's when we really start to make money. And the second time is when we have been taking the profits and we are allocated by like 30 to 40% and the markets start to have a standard 20 to 40% correction. That's when those two times are the best times for us.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that kind of makes sense. This is now your second cycle. You said, obviously, leverage is one of the main things that you've avoided as you've gone on. Are there any other like rules you were saying you've like said to yourself as we go into this cycle? Like, I'm not going to do that again. I fucked up. Like, what are the other things that you think you've really learned from?
I think marrying your bags, that's probably one. I think if you have been going through multiple cycles where you have experienced that your altcoins are giving returns you've never expected, and then also correcting in a way that you've never been expecting before. I think the past cycle in 2021, from November until November 2021 until May 2022, most altcoins went down 90%. In just a matter of 6 months. So I think I'm not going to do that again, and I'm just going to be happy with the returns that I'm having. So I think overall I'm just way more conservative going into the markets, which, if you have a strategy that enables you to lower the amount of risks, your rewards will be lower too, but then you're also not peaking in your stress when this volatility starts to pick up. You're just way more relaxed. I think that's the overall way.
You have any tips on how to stay way more relaxed? I think, you know, lots of people make bad decisions they regret, FOMOing into stuff and chasing things lower and all that kind of stuff. Like, do you have like, you know, non-price and non-crypto related mental triggers that you use to help yourself make more efficient decisions and keep your mental frame of mind a bit more balanced?
Well, honestly, I would definitely say that everybody just needs to experience how it feels to lose your money if you're a trader. And that is harsh, but that's the only way moving forward. If you think about the markets right now with Bitcoin hitting $64,000, there is a certain likelihood that Bitcoin is going to correct by 30%. We don't know why, but it will always happen in a cycle. And people are just impatient of waiting for such a correction to happen. They are just chasing the rally. They have been chasing Solana. They have been chasing the run on Injective. And that is fine. But as you can see, every market has a correction, which is between 20 to 40%. For altcoins, it's between 25 to 60%. So in terms of mindset, if you see these things happening and Bitcoin is being discussed all over the news, all over the internet, all your friends talk about it, just relax and stay calm and wait for the best moment. Because if everybody talks about it, it's probably not the best time to get into it. There's always going to be the correction. For instance, if you start buying Bitcoin at 64K, it's probably a wise decision if you want to hold for 2 years. But if you're buying at this point, it's a profit-taking area for a lot of people that have been buying at 15K to 20K. They're going to rebalance their portfolio anyway, and the amount of buyers will be less. So why take the risk right now if there is a chance that the markets are going to correct by 20%? Maybe from higher, you don't know, but at least if that correction takes place, profit taking has been happening, liquidations have been happening, and the chances that the markets are reversing are way higher than buying here.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. I think patience is the main thing there, isn't it? Like, it's just so easy to just get sucked into something and feel like you're missing out, and then only to regret it a few hours or days later when you had a better buying opportunity. And I think like dollar cost averaging is a good tactic as well. Like, you know, if you're desperate to get in, put some money in, but save some capital so you can buy and add on dips, and not just, you know, wipe yourself out. True. on that first trade.
Right now, right? Like, Bitcoin's just been going higher and higher and higher and higher. Like, I think I would have even had that advice when Bitcoin was at like 40K. And now it's been tough because I think people have been waiting for that dip, and they've really, sometimes they just throw in the towel and they throw it in way too late. I think part of that is like the pain of seeing that FOMO, but actually it's way worse than waiting. Like, it is just way worse because your mentality, if you put yourself into a trade, let's say you bought it today, or you bought it like maybe even last week, and we start to see this sort of dip, the mentality of when you're losing money, I think you make worse decisions. Like, and I just think that I do think that Bitcoin's going to have a big correction. I don't know when. Like, I think today's move will have scared a lot of people. Like, generally, I know it's been a huge liquidation event, and you'll be able to buy, you know, I think some nice liquidation wicks on coins. But I do think people will remember today that Bitcoin doesn't just go higher. You know, I think it's been one of these things where it's just like, well, I'll just buy Bitcoin in the morning, and in the evening it's going to be higher. This, I think, will make people come back to the market and be like, you know what, maybe I'll take some profits. I can imagine we are not just going to straight line now, even with the inflows from BlackRock. Like, I think people will sell into this a little bit just because of how, well, how everyone's just been reminded, like how big a liquidation that was.
Yeah, not even like if you're positioned in Bitcoin, you've endured a pretty nice flush. But if you're positioned into altcoins, I think it's even heavier to see your position going down by like 20 to 30% in a matter of minutes. I think that the patient is definitely important, but also realizing that everything on social media is basically a scam. Ultimately, if you're going onto social media right now, it's a recipe for disaster, because I think basically anyone is just saying Bitcoin is going straight to 100K, or when Solana was speaking, Ethereum is shit and Solana is going to go to $300. I think all those videos, tweets and stuff, they influence your own emotions and your bias, and because of that you start making a wrong decision, and because you have been making a wrong decision, you continue to do so to repair the first decision. So if something feels too good to be true, just don't do it. Just be patient. I mean, just wait for a correction to happen. And perhaps if Bitcoin definitely goes to 100K and then has the correction and you buy at 70K, who cares? It's down 30%. So there is a higher chance that it continues to go up from there than buying if something is just wicking as it is right now.
Yeah. I like how you're bullish on Pepe. Actually, I remember watching a chart of yours on Pepe. Like, that's been a rough ride. We've been massive owners of Pepe for a while. Is that like your top meme coin for this cycle? Like 100 billion. Like, that would be wild if it did that. I was looking at it today. It didn't even sell off really on this move. Like, it, now that it's kind of reclaimed that above 1 billion level. I mean, what do you think, OSF? We actually spoke about this in a group chat, me and OSF, because we both had big positions in WIF, Dog with Hat, and in Pepe. And we were debating like what is going to be the doge of this cycle. Both have strong, but like now that Pepe went through that hole, like it went all the way down to like whatever it was, $300 million market cap, there was so much FUD. And now it's kind of come out the other end. It's still got, what, 170K holders of this thing? Like, it's got a full community there of people. I don't know. Is that the coin for this cycle? Like, there's not many other 100Xs at 1 billion that you can really play for.
Yeah, look, I think, I mean, Pepe at 1.5, whatever it is, $1.5 billion market cap, to call that 100X at this level, I think is a bit punchy.
I mean, it's a wild call.
I think there's been plenty of opportunities to buy Pepe. I mean, Pepe was trading at a third of its market cap right now, just 2 or 3 weeks ago, right? And I think those are the opportunities. I'm really bullish on Pepe. I think Pepe will probably go to multiple billions of dollars of market cap, but it's not what I would pick for 100X because, I mean, that would be crazy. But crazier things have happened and we've seen stuff like that. But I think that people often make comparisons to Doge and SHIB. I think you have to remember that the Elon Musk thing for Doge is something it has that's unique to it that nothing else has. But SHIB doing what it did, maybe it shows you the power of stuff, and I wouldn't fade what meme coins can do. But yeah, like I think for Pepe would be like, if I'm willing to play with large, if I'm really bullish on memes and I want to play with a large amount of capital, I would buy Pepe because I can make multiples on a large amount of capital on something that is liquid and has tons of market cap. Like if I told you a few 100Xs, you couldn't put $1 million into that. You couldn't put 100K into that because they're not as liquid, right? But Pepe is one of the most liquid things that gives you like a high return potential, but it also obviously has massive risk as well. But it's fucking, I mean, we've traded size in Pepe. If you just go into Binance, for example, you can literally trade millions of dollars of Pepe, spot Pepe on Binance without even really moving the market. Like it's insanely, insanely liquid.
Yeah, I'm just tempted to go even bigger. I am. So what do your clients ask you about? Like the nature of the clients, like are they just asking for Bitcoin and ETH, or are they like asking for your DGEN plays? And if so, like what are your other ones?
Yeah, so basically they ask a lot about Pepe.
FOMO into this.
I'm fooling around. I'm definitely not trading meme coins for my clients. That's really? Just my personal. No, I'm not.
Me and OSF, we actually did a podcast with quite a well-known podcaster in the space, like a YouTuber in the space, about Pepe a few months ago. And we were like, we think it's a great buy. We think Dog with Hat's a great buy. And they didn't put it out because they didn't want. They just thought it was too risky to be talking to an audience about it. I thought it was quite funny. I was literally going to try and look at it yesterday, but it does feel as though no one really wants to say, I'll put all your money in Pepe because, you know, you're going to lose friends that way.
Well, I was discussing it last week, and I was actually, it was on my list to start trading for myself, but then it's one of those old standard stuff that you're discussing it, but it just takes away and you're not in it. But for our clients, I think most of our clients are coming from the traditional finance world, and they want to get an allocation into Bitcoin or into crypto, and they just simply don't know how. That is one category. So they just want to have an allocation. They want to have an expert or an advisor that helps them with their investments into crypto because it's still the Wild West. And there's a certain group that has been enduring a bear market already, or a bull and a bear market in 2021, have been purchasing their first Bitcoin in the middle of 2021 and have lost their money and are regaining it, but want to do it well. And then they need assistance as well. So those are the two categories that are basically reaching out to us for assistance. And slowly but surely also corporates and entities are getting into the markets.
Yeah, it's good to hear. I mean, I do feel like we're about to go fully mainstream. So, you know, you're not going to always take your advice from like your BlackRock advisor on what to go in. I do think you're going to see a lot of this hybrid capital kind of come in, and you're going to get a lot more interest in kind of what you're doing. All right. Well, look, I think this has been kind of a interesting chat. Like, what do you have any? We normally end with a few different questions, but if you were to pick a few different gems for how to make money this cycle, like what are your main things you advise people to do?
I'm just not into gems anymore, as in gems as in small caps. I'm just no, that's just not my type of game outside of Pepe, but that's just not a micro cap.
So avoid gems.
Sorry?
Avoid gems would be number one.
No, you can trade them. I mean, if you want to allocate funds into a microcap, go ahead, but just don't do it with all your money. The chances that it goes to zero are very much higher than that it goes up by 100x. And I think if you watch social media, you'll probably see videos about people hitting that 100x, but it's just, that is just like less than 0.01% of the people doing it. They don't show all the losses that they have. They don't show the on-chain meme coins that they got rock pulled in. So I think in terms of gems into this cycle, I think honestly, if you want to get a high return, look for use cases that are actually solving something into this ecosystem. Like for instance, Arbitrum, Optimism are not gems, but they are the better versions of Matic and Phantom, which we all experienced in the previous cycle. Yeah, I think sit it out, be patient, and wait for the returns to come in, because this bull market is probably going to go higher than we all expect it to be.
And then I think conversely, the final question we always ask is how not to get wrecked. I think you've already spoken about leverage, but is there any other tidbits you'd say to for people not to get wrecked?
Should I ask this to OSF or...
OSF happily gets himself wrecked. Like
he has him, huge
meme coin bags and doesn't like he lives for this shit.
I would say don't use leverage. but anyway, if you use leverage, you can do it, but just do it with a like a small portion of your account. I'm using leverage for my personal training, just for the volatility, but just a tiny portion.
I think that's a good idea. Yeah, I think leverage should just be used as I like having a little bit of it because
you're gonna feel something.
Like, yeah, well, it actually what it ends up makes me do is that's like my degen portfolio. You know what I mean? Like that becomes like the shit I do the most degenerate stuff with, and then that allows me to like keep more relaxed spot bags, I think.
Well, honestly, I think that what we're going to with MiCAR and all the regulations is that I think leverage is going to be used as a hedging tool. So I think that the options markets are going to go crazy in this cycle because the institutions need to hedge their spot positions by trading options. I think that that is the definition of leverage trading instead of what retail is doing right now by sometimes even 1000xing a cryptocurrency that is volatile, as we have been seeing. But that's just not how we should be using it. But if you use it, of course you can, but just be aware of the risks that are involved and use it with a tiny portion.
All right, I think that's great advice. We normally do loot box spins at the end here, Michael. I don't know if you want to stick around for that. That we've given away nearly 700 grand of prizes, I think, over the last year. NFTs, which is kind of mine and OSF's origin. But OSF, do you want to give the second code, and then we'll move forward to the loot box spins?
Yeah. The second code for you guys is Michal 181.
Good, nice.
Thank you.
Right, intern. What? How are we looking on the show? Did we put out a tweet? How are we doing the winners this time?
Yeah, I think we should be good to.
Maybe I'll share a screen.
There we go.
Hopefully, I can get into the Robit account. Just give me a minute. Yes, and it's been loaded up. Let me go to the loot box. One second. You can actually trade 1000x leverage on Robert if you want to not listen to anything we've said on this in this chat. Let me just get up the. Can you see this? Like where the loot box is, OSF?
The loot box. Oh, it should be in the. Let me find it for you.
Maybe you did it a long time ago, but so many.
I have so many Telegram chats.
Yeah, me too. That's what I'm looking at.
Don't think they sent one.
Did they not send one? Oh no. How's this loot box looking?
Do you want me to send you the one that I made recently the other day?
I think I've got one. I think I've got one. See if this one works.
Oh, here we go. You see, Razor just sent it to us.
Yeah, I got it. I got it. Okay, so who are our winners? Okay, it looks like Tony Ingle, is that? Oh, Seth, you're going to have to help bring people
Tony,
up.
Tony Ingle, Risky Fermanser, Andy P, please request. Okay, I see Tony Ingle. I see Risky Fermanser.
And what's that? Wackax Wacker? Is this?
Yeah, Andy P. Wackax Wacker is the username. Andy P, if you could request, please.
All right. Might have to redraw if they don't come through.
We got two of them. I got Tony Ingle and Risky Fermanser. We just need Andy P.
Andy P. Should we draw another one?
Yeah. Let's see if it comes up. But do you want to redraw in turn in the meantime, just so we have... Andy P, your time is...
If you just hit the redraw thing to the right there. I think he... don't know if he did it right.
I think sometimes when you redraw, it asks you to...
Okay. All right, well, should we just get started with the first two and then... Andy P, Wackax, see if they come on. All right, Michael. That's cool. Thanks so much for the chat. And we'll continue the loot boxes without you, but yeah, awesome to speak to you. And right. How can Thank people you find you by the way?
They can find me on Twitter and YouTube under the nickname Crypto Michanel or Michael van de Poppen.
Love it.
So there they can find me on Twitter and YouTube, and probably there's going to be a lot of content tonight as the markets are crazy.
All right, thanks a lot, and we'll speak to you soon.
Thank you very much, guys. Good luck. Bye bye.
Thank you. All right. We have
Annie Emexa, Anger Emexa.
Anger Emexa, Amcat Igo 15. Anger Emexa.
Man, this is tough. This is tough. How
can we
people...
can we like roll like just five more guys and I'm just gonna call them all out in turn? Yeah. And then just whoever's the first one to receive, we'll add them. Yeah. Or just redraw. Yeah. There we go. All right. Bellingol, Catalyst Rock, Merge. Whichever there's the... I see Anger and Mixer.
We got Anger and Mixer.
Okay, sweet.
All right. I will share my screen and we will get started with this.
Okay. So spin one is Tony Ingle. Spin two is Risky Fermanser. Spin three is Anger and Mixer. Guys, DM the Rec Radio account with your ETH addresses once you win your prize. Good luck.
Can you guys see this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Here we fucking go. Oh my God. Fuck me. That's one of the biggest we've ever done on the show. Quite a nice looking Bored Ape as well. Jeez. That's a cheetah gang, right?
Tony Ingle, you want a Bored Ape? Congrats.
That's 80 grand, according to the valuation.
Whoa, that's a big one.
That is one of the biggest ones I think we've ever had. That is fucking insane. Wow. Thank you, Rollbit. That is fucking insane. All right, let's go again.
Oh, my God. Thank you, guys.
That's 80 grand. That is fucking insane. Hopefully that changes your day. Right, let's see who's going to be next. Who's this for then, OSS?
This is for Risky Fermanser.
Risky Fermanser. Holy. Oh, you want a Rec Guy?
Oh, you want a Rec Guy.
Three grand of Rec Guy right there. Rec Guy on a tear right now.
Congrats.
See you in the dive bar.
Thanks. See you in the dive bar.
Okay.
All right, last one. Ango Mexer. Good luck.
Oh, that was nearly a mutant ape in the
Always
end.
Always want a mutant ape, but you want to fat cash grabs.
Yeah, OSF edition. Wow, that is a that is an insane haul for those three. Pretty awesome to win. No worries, man.
Thank you, guys. Congrats again.
That's amazing. It's my whole fucking week.
That's what we like to hear. That's what we like to hear. 80 grand. Fuck me. Imagine if you just want 80 grand. Okay, guys, we'll be back next week. Do we have the guest for next week, Osef?
Somebody.
Sure, it's already booked up. But yeah, KBM will hopefully be back. And yeah, thank you, Robert, for sponsoring the show. Obviously, some insane prizes this week. We do them every single week. That probably takes us to 800 plus grand of prizes that we've given out. So if you're not fucking listening to the show, what the hell are you doing on your Wednesday night? We will see you next Wednesday night for the next one. Thanks.